In Matthew's 25th chapter, Jesus tells this story. "For it is as if a man going on a journey summoned his slaves and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, to each according to his ability. Then the man went away. The one who had received the 5 talents went off at once and traded with them and made 5 more talents. In the same way, the one who had the 2 talents made 2 more talents. But the one who had received the 1 talent went off and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. The one who had received the 5 talents came forward, bringing 5 more talents, saying, 'Master, you handed over to me 5 talents. See, I have made 5 more. His master said to him, "Well done, good and trustworthy slave. You have been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master.' And the one with the 2 talents also came forward, saying, 'Master, you handed over to me 2 talents, and see, I have made 2 more talents. His master said to him, "Well done, good and trustworthy slave. You have been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master.' And the one who had received the 1 talent also came forward, saying, 'Master, I knew that you were a harsh man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you did not scatter seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here, you have what is yours.' But his master replied, 'You wicked, lazy slave, you knew, did you, that I reap where I did not sow and gather where I did not scatter? Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and on my return I would have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to the one with 10, for to all those who have, more will be given, and they will have an abundance. But from those who have nothing, even what they have will be taken away. As for this worthless slave, throw him into the outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. This too is the word of the Lord." It was a few days after Christmas, and the setting was a darkened movie theater in Jefferson City, Missouri. I was sitting next to my younger brother when the previews finally ended, the iconic orchestral score began, and that familiar static blue text appeared on the screen: "A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away." And just like that, I nudged my brother's arm, and we together were transported to the living room of our childhood home 25 years earlier, where Josh and I gathered every pillow all over the house, piled up blankets on the living room floor, microwaved popcorn, and wore out the VHS tapes of the original Star Wars trilogy. For 2 hours that night in Jefferson City, the power of nostalgia took over. We've all experienced it, the power of memory evoked by a shared story. Isn't there something about a well-told tale that marks a place in time, a place that we can return to as soon as the music begins to play, as soon as the words appear on the screen? Isn't there something about a well-told tale that draws us together, that shakes us from our preconceptions and our present state and opens us to new possibilities afforded by suspending our disbelief for just a moment to believe that we are there. Stories. Stories are the way the human creature makes meaning in the world. Most days I have the joy of driving our nearly three-year-old son, Benjamin, to preschool here at Second. Now, mornings are not always easy in our house these days. And so Sarah and I have developed a number of strategies to move the process along throughout the morning. We have a dynamic and creative combination of energetic persuasion and stern ultimatums. But recently, I've discovered that there is one guaranteed way to get Ben from the breakfast table into my car, and that guaranteed way is to promise him that as soon as he's in the car, I will tell the kitty story. Now, I'm not sure if you've heard the kitty story. It's the ongoing saga of four little kitties. There's Mommy Kitty, Daddy Kitty, Brother Kitty, and the star of our show, Ben Kitty. These kitties travel all around the galaxy. Sometimes they're in outer space, sometimes deep in the ocean, sometimes in the forest. And there's a cast of characters who might appear at any moment. There's Nice Bear. There's Nice Lion. There's Nice Tiger. Do you sense the theme developing here? I've discovered that as long as there is the promise of a story, Ben is ready to go. And so I know the power of stories. Once upon a time, there were four little kitties who lived in a big house. A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. It was a dark and stormy night. Once upon a time, there was a princess in a castle. Once upon a time, a sower went out to sow. A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho. There was a man who had two sons. And today, a man is going on a journey and summons his slaves to entrust his property to them. Jesus knew what we experience, that there are some truths in this world so profound, that there are some truths so close to the heart of reality that only a story will do to describe them. And Jesus also knew that there are some truths so difficult, some realities so challenging to our assumptions and so disruptive of our lives that we can only hear them packaged in a disarming narrative. This, I believe, is why Jesus proclaimed the message of God's kingdom in parables. This morning's passage from Matthew's gospel is certainly among the most provocative parables Jesus ever told. We're in the 25th chapter of Matthew. Jesus is nearing the end of his own life. His enemies are beginning to gather around him, swirling and conspiring to arrest him and ultimately to crucify him. In that context, Jesus gathers his closest friends, those who have been with him on the journey from Galilee to the holy city. He gathers them privately. He speaks to them personally, intimately, intentionally. A man is planning to go on a long journey, he says. He will leave behind significant responsibility and resources. He will entrust those resources and that responsibility to his servants. Could the disciples not have heard in Jesus' words their own story unfolding? That he was the man and they were the servants about to be given major responsibilities as Jesus goes on a long journey. The man summons his servants and distributes his property among them, 5, 2, 1 talents, to each according to his ability, and then the master goes away. Now let me pause here to make clear what would have been obvious. A talent is a sum of money. An enormous sum of money. 20 years' wages in the ancient world. So what is being given here is not pocket change. It's extremely valuable, far more than any of the servants could have hoped to earn or even see in a lifetime. The money is given without explanation or direction, no guidance, no expectations, perhaps inviting the listener to consider how we might handle a veritable fortune entrusted to us. Now, since this is a parable, and since Jesus is our storyteller, we can expect a twist, a surprise, a change. The first two servants wheel and deal. They trade and invest, and lo and behold, they double their talents. While the one who received a single talent is cautious and prudent, the third servant is the one I want on my finance committee. A fiscal conservative. Aware that he's in the possession of someone else's resources, that he did not earn or deserve these, the man takes no chances. He puts the master's resources away for safekeeping. He is absolutely certain that he will be able to return every dime entrusted to him when the master returns. He sleeps well at night knowing that that talent is buried deep in the ground where no one will find it. Well, the master returns and is utterly delighted with the first two servants. Lavish with his praise. Well done, good and trustworthy slave. You have been trustworthy in a few things. I will put you in charge of many. Enter the joy of your master. Now, wait a minute. Isn't that an odd definition of trustworthiness? After all, let's be real, you don't double an investment by playing it conservatively. You must be willing to risk it all to collect that kind of return. We might expect that the master would say something like, "Well done, courageous slave. Well done, fearless slave." Or perhaps most on point, "Well done, very, very lucky slave." But trustworthy, not the way I think of the word. Indeed, the trustworthy slave is the third one. Prudent, cautious, steady, reliable, my finance committee member. Yeah, sure, no gain, but no loss, no risk, no surprise. And the response of the master is breathtakingly harsh. I would expect him to say something like, "Well, okay, you did what you could. You were admirably cautious, respectful of my property." Instead, the response is almost violent. "You wicked, lazy slave, take the money from him and throw him out in the street." You can imagine the shock of the disciples when Jesus spoke those words. You can imagine it, and maybe you're feeling the same way this morning. What do we 21st century disciples make of this ancient parable? First, we remember that what we have here is a parable. It's a story meant to open us to deeper understanding, perhaps meant to connect us to words we have heard before. For the disciples, a long time ago, in what must have seemed a galaxy far, far away, they heard these words, "For those who want to save their life will lose it. And those who lose their life for my sake will find it." A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, these disciples heard their master say, "What will it profit you if you gain the whole world but forfeit your life?" This is no accounting theory, no finance advice. It's the logic of the gospel. It will offend our sensibilities and challenge our assumptions. My friend and New Testament professor Charlie Kauser called it gospel investment advice. The first two servants go for broke. They risk it all to invest what the master has given to them. The third servant's prudence, which looks like wisdom, is in fact self-protection. And that's no way to follow Jesus. That's no way to live your life. Holding back, burying the talent, avoiding the risk, in a constant state of anxiety and fear, the kind of world-changing faith to which you and I are called will always involve some kind of risk. C.S. Lewis once said, if you want to save your heart from breaking, don't give it away to anyone or anything. If you want to save your heart from breaking, bury it. After all, what is more risky than commitment? What is more risky than committing your life for as long as that life lasts to relationship? What's more risky than having children and investing 18, 19, 20 or more years without any idea how it's going to turn out? What could be more risky than following your passion? Investing everything you have, time, energy, faith, resources, with no promise of success and the distinct possibility of failure, what could be more risky and trusting the promise of God and taking the leap of faith? We will find on this journey of faith over and over again the temptation is to be prudent, to protect what we have, to bury what we've been given, to keep it all safe and secure underground. Now, we know it's not the most exciting or thrilling way to live, but at least it's safe. The problem, of course, is that such an approach ignores the call to discipleship. If we are to be trustworthy servants of a God who took the ultimate risk for us, who lost his life to redeem our living, we too will take risks. I've said from this pulpit before that the most important question for any disciple of Jesus or any community of faith is this one. What time is it? Those first two servants sensed something that escaped the third one. They sensed that the moment was right to take a risk. That it was time to cast off the fear that argues for self-protection, the anxiety that urges cautious control. It was time to put their trust to the test. And what about you? And what about us? What time is it in your life? What time is it at Second Presbyterian Church? What time is it in our community? The greatest gift God has given each of us and all of us together is the gift of time, but it is not an unlimited resource. What time is it for us? Jesus knew his time was drawing short. Jesus entrusted the work of the kingdom to those around him and urged them to take a risk. What time is it here? Might I suggest that you answered that question in part a couple of years ago when you called a 35-year-old pastor with less than a decade experience to serve and lead this great church filled with storied tradition of 180 years. What a risk! It's the kind of risk that signifies bold faith in a God who will hold the future as firmly as the past. It's the kind of trust that leads a church to make use of these tremendous resources of past faithfulness to invest in future ministry with the firm conviction that God is faithful. And the bold belief that what we do here matters. The kind of hope that calls us to stretch, to reach, to grow, to move beyond ourselves and into spaces of transformation. It's the sign of a people who are convinced that God is on the move, and so you should be too. So here's your gospel investment advice. Don't play it safe. Don't be content with lives of quiet desperation and no sense of adventure. Model your living on the action of a God who took a risk, who invested so much in you. Here's the basic question. What will we do with what we've been given? Jesus could not be clearer on this. If you choose to bury what you have, to live cautiously in the months and the years ahead, the good news is you know exactly what will happen. No gains, but no losses, no risks, no surprises. But if we invest our lives in Christ, if we take that risk, there's no telling what might happen. There's no telling what might happen if we take a leap of faith into an unknown future. We don't know what will happen if we venture forward in faith, if we jump and wait to grow wings. We don't know. All we know is that we will be living by faith in a God of surprises. And brothers and sisters, I'd say, it's worth the risk. Amen.